Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the L.A. Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we got a good show for you. We got our special guest tonight is Angela Hart, who wrote a interesting book called Through Angela's Eyes,
The Inside Story of Operation Firewall.
And how she, what's fascinating about her book is that it deals with her true story of identity theft. Now, her personal investigation led to the arrest of an international computer hacking ring.
She's an amazing woman.
You know, arrested over 40 people and created the laws, really many of the laws that we
came
have
out
today.
Of this case.
Yeah, that we have to protect people online, and so she's going to talk about that, how to keep yourself protected. And
what happened to her?
Yeah, try not to go through what happened to her. We have Pete Wood tonight as sports.
Woody in the ring.
Yeah. And let's get started. I have some really good news tonight about the Democrats that gathered. You know, the Democrats in Wisconsin gathered more than 1 million signatures to recall Scott Walker, and I was really thrilled.
And you can
thank
AFSCME for that.
Yeah, AFSCME had a major.
The labor union was the director of that, and
right.
really kept that interest going, and really did something about it.
Yeah, and
because their people were seriously affected by this.
Oh, absolutely.
Turd.
Yeah, this Scott Walker, and these Republicans in Wisconsin are just trying to destroy the middle class.
Brutal. Just
the public
brutal.
Workers. But let me just read this, because I think it's really worth it.
It's from the Washington Post.
Yeah. Hang on a second here. I just want to open this up.
It's the second post that it should be.
But it was really good news. And here you go.
Dems gather more than 1 million signatures to recall Scott Walker. Wisconsin Democrats are telling reporters that they have gathered more than 1 million signatures to recall Governor Scott Walker, a remarkable number that could have a real ramifications for this year's presidential race. While that total has been hinted at, Wisconsin Dem spokesman Graham Zielinski confirms to me that it's official. John Nichols, speculating earlier today about the possibility, puts the number in perspective. If that is the case, the movement to oust Walker will have secured the support of a higher percentage of eligible voters than has ever been sought to recall an American governor. Dems need around 540,000 of those signatures to be certified as official in order for the recall of Walker to proceed. The 1 million total makes that cushion pretty comfortable. There's still a very long way to go in terms of getting Walker recalled. A mass amount of cash will again flood into the state from both sides in order to influence the outcome. But the mere fact that there's already so much support for the recall suggests that despite the Democratic failure to take back Wisconsin State Senate last year, there's still a tremendous amount of grassroots energy on the ground on the Dem side, nearly a year since the fight in Wisconsin began in a key swing state in a presidential election year. And that was by Greg Sargent.
So we're very, very pleased to hear this. And this came up today, too. I was really, I think progress.org sent this to me. And this is so
sick. The title is GOP Senator. We need child labor law to fight obesity epidemic.
Yeah, I mean this whole thing with these guys, you know, working with on Mitt Romney.
Gingrich.
Gingrich has put 12-year-olds to work cleaning toilets in the schools and stuff. This is the kind of crap that the GOPs are dealing with, that you're dealing with these people. I mean, it's one thing for to have a kid clean his room or clean his work in the yard, maybe do a newspaper route, but, you know, come on. In a recent town hall in Osage, Iowa, Senator Chuck Grassley responded to a question about the Labor Department's stricter limits on child labor by claiming that they could exacerbate the child obesity epidemic by making kids less active. Concern was raised about the proposed Department of Labor's intent to greatly limit child labor on family farms. This farm bill will greatly affect our FFA and 4-H programs, said Grassley. Kids won't be able to help on farms not owned by their parents. It's interesting that this child labor bill goes against Michelle Obama's anti-obesity initiative, said Grassley. How can kids be active if they aren't limited by this law?
If they are limited.
If they're limited by this law. Grassley represents a farm state that both relies on child labor and contributes to the national obesity epidemic through its production of corn products like high fructose corn syrup. Iowa farmers benefit from billions of dollars in corn subsidies that allow them to put a glut of cheap, unhealthy foods on the market. And as for his Dickensian defense of child labor, that's sadly par for the course for Republicans these days. Several GOP-led states have rolled back child labor laws. In December, 70 rural state lawmakers, led by Representative Danny Redberg, denounced that the Labor Department's new protections for country's most vulnerable workers. They argue that hard manual labor teaches children important life lessons. Yeah, how to get your hands cut, how to fall into machinery, how to get trampled over by wild running trucks.
Under current law,
400,000 children
working on farms are not protected from exploitation and dangerous labor. The proposed rules would forbid children younger than 16 from working with pesticides, timber operations, handling power-driven equipment, or contributing to the cultivation, and harvesting, and curing of tobacco. Contrary to Grassley's suggestion, the physical activity children endure during farm labor is no picnic. The fatality rate for child farm workers is 4 times higher than that of non-agricultural child workers. Many Republicans have mocked First Lady Michelle Obama's anti-childhood obesity initiative, but Grassley in particular has powerful financial motivations for supporting some of the epidemic's worst culprits. As a member of the Agricultural, Nutrition, and Forestry Committee, he's raked in hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions from the food and beverage, food processing and sale, and agricultural services and products industries.
Yeah. I mean,
he's just a mouthpiece.
If you've ever worked in agriculture, which I have as a child, I know what it's like to do this, and you know it's dangerous work. I've seen kids get hurt badly. From this, picking things up and hurting the backs,
it's the pesticides,
and not only that, I mean, just that there are dangers in the field that you don't even realize, when you get 10-year-old and 11-year-old kids working there, it's rough, and, you know, unfortunately they're there, and migrant workers are all constantly doing it, and you're seeing it's 4 times higher. You know,
the fatality rate,
for crying out loud. But yet, you know, don't talk to Republicans about this stuff because,
no.
You know, even though none of them probably worked in their lives. Ron Paul is, we can go on to that, but that's a little, it's an interesting thing, very interesting article. He's not a lunatic, it's just that people say he is, you know.
Yeah, well, he's a very smart man.
Very, very remarkable stuff he said. This is the anti-Israel hackers strike again by attacking El Al and Tel Aviv stock exchange websites. I thought that was kind of interesting because you know to note that
they're fighting back.
They're fighting back. You know they really are, and you know
this
cyber war can be more deadly for you know financially anyway than.
This is from ukrainet.info.
Right.
Pro-Palestinian hackers continue to strike at Israeli websites on Monday, targeting the websites of the national airline Et Al and the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange, TASE. The apparent leader of the group, who calls himself Ox Omar, warned Israeli journalists in advance of the attack. In a Monday night interview, Ox Omar told Israel's Channel 10 that he was working with pro-Palestinian hacker group called Nightmare to take down the Al Al and TASE websites. It is unclear where he is from, though he has identified himself as Saudi. Using a computer-generated voice and a pre-prepared video, he said, "This is the beginning of cyber war against Israel. You are not safe anymore. Let's hack Israeli shopping websites. Let's hack Israeli military websites and publish their sensitive and hidden information. Let's destroy Israel in cyber world. It'll come to real world also." Ox Omar, who is spearheading the cyber assault on Israel, previously published some 20,000 Israeli credit card numbers. And then there's a little video.
And yet, YNET reported the stock exchange website was showing trade figures but did not allow any other action. Trading continued as usual since it is managed by an outside system. This was the image that the LLA website was loading Monday morning, and it just said, "Dear customers, due to maintenance, LL site is not available at the moment. Please try again later." YNET reported a pro-Israel hacker is also continuing his retaliatory strikes. It says pro-Israeli hacker Hannibal, who
claims that he is a Jew who lives somewhere in the world, published early Monday the Facebook account details of some 20,000 Arab users. He also claimed to possess information that can be used to breach the bank accounts of some 10 million people in Iran and Saudi Arabia, vowing to cause billions of dollars in damage.
This is a pro-Israeli hacker.
YNET looked into Hannibal's claim and confirmed that the details he published indeed allow for the unauthorized use of Facebook accounts. Contrary to the recent case, which seems to be individual actors, Hamas, which rules Gaza, weighed in, calling for an escalation of hacking against Israel. Hamas spokesman Sami Abu Zuhiri emailed a statement to Gaza-based reporters. Penetrating Israeli websites means opening a new field of resistance in the beginning of an electronic war against Israeli occupation. To counter the threat, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in August set up a national cyber directorate, and the IDF is assembling an elite team of computer hackers to protect key websites.
Well, it's war still. It's cyberspace. And explosives. I thought this was an interesting thing because we get so much crazy info. I'll play this in a while, but I wanted to get to something more important here. There are two things that explosive wars. U.S. media is first to bomb Iran. It's a short.
Audio piece
that tells you how the mainstream media just is constantly pushing war and has been.
They're beating the drums for war.
They're constantly, and they have been doing this for years and years and years. And
exactly what they did before we went to war with Iraq.
But what's interesting about this too is that they've done it so long, okay, that they've never stopped. They're always pro-war. There's nothing anti-war in the media, in the U.S. media. It's all pro-war. About 4 minutes, we'll play some of it.
America's mainstream media is being accused of playing with fire for playing up the prospect of war between Iran and the West. It's a sensitive time with the military standoff in the Strait of Hormuz and looming sanctions over Iran's nuclear program. But as Ghani Chichikan reports, viewers in the States are repeatedly hearing how war is virtually inescapable.
There's really two options: bomb Iran or let Iran get the bomb.
With tension between Iran and the West as high as ever, a host of hardline speakers on U.S. mainstream media seem to be pushing the audience to believe that war is inevitable.
The better way to prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons is to attack its nuclear weapons program directly.
Although experts say war with Iran is far from being inevitable,
I don't think that we are there yet, that is to say, at the precipice.
The media are already preparing the grounds for it, some by misinforming the public. The New York Times wrote that the International Atomic Energy Agency said Iran's nuclear program has a military objective. But that's not what the IAEA reported. The watchdog said Iran might have the technology to develop a nuclear weapon if it wants to. Or here's another public misconception due to a lack of information.
I would be saying to the Iranians, you either open up those facilities, you begin to dismantle them and make them available to inspectors, or we will degrade those facilities through airstrikes.
In fact, IAEA inspectors have already been in the country monitoring Iran's nuclear facilities.
When the American people hear information over and over again, and sometimes it is often these subtleties, you know, not providing the context of the IAEA report, or not putting in some of the doubts back in 2002, 2003 about the Iraqi WMD programs, that kind of slanting of the news does have the effect of altering how the American public views an issue.
The U.S. mainstream media have proved to be cheerleaders for war. Jeff Cohen was a senior producer of a popular TV show before the Iraq invasion. He says they were under pressure from their bosses to root for war because their owners benefited from it.
It was a constant pressure campaign to make sure that the pro-invasion voice was dominant.
Jeff Cohen says not much has changed in U.S. mainstream journalism since the Iraq invasion.
There's no doubt that the mainstream media are crucial in this idea of selling this idea that the U.S. is going to be in a perpetual war.
Media analysts say since the intervention in Libya, U.S. media have been instrumental in making Americans get used to the idea that Washington will continue to intervene militarily in foreign affairs.
I worked at Newsweek and as well as AP and other major U.S. news organizations, and what I saw, especially at places like Newsweek, was this idea that the media was actually part of the establishment, that it was that the American people were to be guided more than even informed.
It seems most American media are so used to talking wars that when, after a decade of inconclusive war in Afghanistan, the White House announced the necessity to negotiate with the Taliban.
You have to have a political solution at some point.
The message and the words political solution came out as somewhat alien.
Peace talks with the Taliban. It's come to this. Tell us more about these proposed peace talks, Ed. That may sound a little weird to some of our viewers.
It seems that words political solution don't belong in the U.S. media vocabulary. Two main reasons. One, boring. And second, some very powerful people are behind a kind of trigger-happy pro-war journalism. Too many times in history, the media did the bidding of war profiteers. We can go back more than 100 years and look at how the American public was primed for war with Spain over Cuba. Media tycoon William Randolph Hearst falsely hyped up the story that the Spanish sunk an American ship, when in fact it sunk because of a coal bunker explosion. It was then that Hearst told his illustrator in Havana, "You furnish the pictures and I'll furnish the war." More than 100 years on, the phrase still sounds relevant, but it doesn't have to be that way. And some argue political solution, although not popular words in the media vocabulary, is better than war and death. I'm Ganesh Shekhan reporting from Washington, RT.
Now, that was Russian television, but they sure put on some good stuff.
Yep.
And they produced that in the United States, by the way. I wanted to read this tonight. Fluoride is linked to the number one cause of death in new research.
Huh.
Right? This is really kind of staggering when I read this, and I said, oh my god, you know, it's bad enough we know it's no good for teeth and everything else, but it's the number one cause for death. United States and in places around the world.
Go ahead.
You want me to read it?
I'll read the second paragraph.
Groundbreaking new research has linked sodium fluoride to cardiovascular disease, the leading cause of death worldwide. Researchers found that fluoride consumption directly stimulates the hardening of your arteries, a condition known as arteriosclerosis that is highly correlated with the number one killer. Sodium fluoride is currently added to the water supply of many cities worldwide, and despite extreme opposition from health professionals and previous studies linking it to decreased IQ and fertility.
In their research, scientists examined the relationship between fluoride intake and the hardening of the arteries. Studying more than 60 patients, the researchers found a significant correlation between fluoride consumption and the calcification of your arteries. Published in the January edition of the journal Nuclear Medicine Communications, the research highlighted the fact that mass fluoride exposure may be to blame for the cardiovascular disease epidemic that takes more lives each year than cancer. In 2008, cardiovascular disease killed 17 million people. According to the authors of the study, the coronary fluoride uptake value in patients with cardiovascular events was significantly higher than in patients without cardiovascular events. Amazingly, this is not the first report to come out on the dangers of water fluoridation. However, the U.S. government, along with other nations, have allowed for the continued fluoridation of the public water supply despite these key findings. In fact, the U.S. government has even gone on record stating that a reduction in water fluoridation needs to occur following the results of a massive study that found water fluoridation affected cognitive function to the point of lowering the IQ of children. It turns out that the announcement was little more than a public relations stunt to curtail the massive wave of activism that followed the findings.
Government admits dangers yet continues to pump fluoride into your water. Over 24 studies have unanimously concluded that fluoride negatively impacts cognitive function. In addition to these 24 studies focusing on cognition, over 100 animal studies have linked fluoride to an increase in male infertility, diabetes, and a whole host of other health problems. In the latest study on cognition, it was found that 28% of the children who lived in an area where fluoride levels were low achieved the highest test scores. This means that the children exposed to less fluoride scored normal or advanced, while only 8% of fluoridated children did the same. In fact, the safety precautions regarding sodium fluoride are quite telling themselves. R25 is toxic if
safety. Risk and safety phrases. I guess they put numbers and stuff on.
Yeah, as to what these things are. Like R32, contact with acid liberates very toxic gas. This is with fluoride now, regarding fluoride. It's toxic if it's swallowed. So in other words, if you have fluoridated mouthwash, or fluoridated toothpaste, and you swallow any of that, which you're putting in your mouth, it's toxic. It'll make you sick.
So there'll be an R25 on there somewhere, and it means toxic if swallowed.
Right. And then R32 is contact with acid liberates very toxic gas. So if that, for some reason, I don't know what, if you have some kind of citric acid, I wonder if you drink it with the orange juice, you know what I mean, or something like that, where it's high acidity, maybe it'll be very toxic gas. Irritating to the skin and eyes, R36 to R38. S1/2, keep locked up and out of reach of children.
Huh.
All right? And the safety precautions regardless are quite telling themselves. These are all part of fluoride. Okay. Wear suitable protective clothing when you're using this stuff. In case of accident or if you feel unwell, seek medical advice immediately. Show the label whenever possible. But what about cavity prevention? Since 1962, the government has recommended fluoride levels between 0.7 and 1.2 milligrams per liter in the nation's drinking water. Touted as an excellent cavity blocker, fluoride has been praised for its alleged power to prevent tooth decay and boost oral health. Research has now revealed that fluoride, the very substance that is supposed to prevent tooth decay, actually does nothing to prevent against cavities. In fact, vitamin D has been found to be the significant more effective in cavity prevention without the extreme side effects. Instead of damaging your body, vitamin D slashes your risk of just about everything fluoride consumption causes.
Hmm.
According to the latest numbers, over 72% of Americans drink water treated with fluoride. Is it any wonder that cardiovascular disease rates are off the charts?
Yeah.
Perhaps most concerning is the fact that fluoride does not even prevent cavities, which is the very reason legislators have pushed it to keep it in the public water supply, despite the links to deadly disease. And even if fluoride was found to prevent cavities, would it be worth the adverse effects?
Fluoride should be completely removed from the international water supply, as it is a threat to public health. Until the proper legislation is passed, acquiring a high-quality water filter that removes fluoride is vital for the health perseverances of you and your family.
So don't do anything with that. And you can, there's an ad on this for Big Berkey water filters. You might want to check that out. Big Berkey water filters that that filters out fluoride.
Let's see.
I wanted to read this too. Radiation poisoning, because we're getting, this is natural news, but we're getting a lot of radiation, and they're expecting even more coming from Fukushima now into the North American continent. So homeopathic and other natural remedies provide protection and treatment. So I kind of like to read that.
They don't ever say much about if they're... sea life is dying.
It's got to be, or mutating,
I mean,
and all that stuff. There's talk so little about
Fukushima. I mean, is there
Fukushima.
Any dead sea life in
yeah.
on the California coast or
there
Hawaii?
There must be.
What about Hawaii, which is much closer?
Yeah,
there must
sure,
be.
Sure.
But we haven't heard a word.
No, and you're not going to, because of public fear. They don't want people to realize that there's not a damn thing they can do about it. They want to build more nuclear power plants. Radioactive waste from Fukushima is approaching the west coast of North America at a frightening rate. Hundreds of seals off the coast of Alaska are dead and dying from symptoms that look ominously like radiation poisoning or disease. And most people wonder what and who is next. Alternative medicine offers a wide variety of treatment to protect and treat radiation sickness. Certain homeopathic medicines and other natural substances may provide relief from radiation disease symptoms or boost the body's natural vital force to protect itself from the severity of radiation exposure. Symptoms of radiation sickness.
Early signs of radiation illness include headache, nausea, vomiting, and fever. Additional symptoms may appear later, including weakness, dizziness, mental confusion, hair loss, skin lesions, bloody vomit and stool, low blood pressure, wounds that are slow to heal, bone marrow deterioration, gastrointestinal and cardiovascular shutdown, and cancerous tumors. Many of these symptoms also appear in animals, as evidenced by the seals in Alaska. Protection. Homeopathic fucus vesicles. Tuberculosis is a tincture made from a form of sea kelp that can be used to protect the thyroid from radioactive contamination. Like potassium iodide, it acts to block the thyroid receptors, preventing absorption of radiation. However, the dose is easier to control. It's milder and better tolerated by people with thyroid disease and other sensitivities.
Topical treatments. Raw organic honey. Possesses antibacterial properties and can reduce the severity of skin burns and lesions, as well as lessen inflammation and ulcerations of the mucous membrane of the digestive tract. Calendula extract is a healing, soothing liquid that can be mixed with water and applied to relieve burns, sores, itching, peeling, and other skin ailments resulting from exposure to radiation.
Echinacea extract. It's rich in anti-inflammatory agents and acts as an antibiotic when applied to infected areas of the skin. It can be used in any skin ailment, especially those that become infected and septic.
Cleanse. Baking soda baths provide an excellent cleanse for removing radiation from body cells. Baking soda is highly alkaline and helps restore the body's pH, reducing the incidence of acidosis, a state that fosters weakness and disease. Drinking baking soda mixed with water can help reduce inflammation and heal mouth sores resulting from exposure to radiation.
Oh, boy.
Right. Homeopathy. Clinical experience has shown the
efficacy
of several homeopathic remedies for the treatment of radiation disease symptoms. Cadmium sulfuratum may relieve itching, gastrointestinal symptoms such as vomiting or diarrhea, aggravated by the slightest movement, and severe flu-like aches and pains in the muscle. The person needing this remedy may feel chilled even in a warm room. Phosphorus is often the first remedy needed after exposure to radiation.
Oh.
It can help reduce the pain and intensity of burns to the skin, as well as lessening vomiting and other stomach upsets. A dose of phosphorus may help center someone after being exposed.
Time for our guests. Why don't we just tell the folks at home what
this... Yeah, so please go to this website. It's naturalnews.com. And, check it out. This is very important, news to...
So look up radiation poisoning, homeopathic and other natural remedies provides protection and treatment.
Right. So radiation poisoning and naturalnews.com. And we're going to go to... I'm going to call our guest here, and Lila's going to talk a little bit about it and introduce her. And her name is Angela Hart, and let's go here. Hang on a second.
Leo's going to call her up, and her book is Through Angela's Eye.
Yeah.
And this is the untold story, inside story of Operation Firewall. After a series of unfortunate changes and circumstances, this is what she says, my life took an unwelcome turn. What started out as a personal battle against those terrorizing me by stealing my identity through my the largest case of identity theft in United States history. Caused her financial stress. Once they threatened her life, she became angry and determined to get justice.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Angela.
How are you?
Hi, how are you? Good.
My name is Lila. I'm a co-host with Leo on the L.A. Steel Show.
How
okay.
are you? Yeah.
Good. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Your book is fascinating in that your story is quite amazing.
And very frightening, by the way.
Yes. To have it happen. And to our guests, you probably talked about this a number of times in your interviews, but I do believe that it's important that for our guests for our audience to know how you started. It's a fascinating story how you started this internet business, and from day one you were hacked. I thought that to me was amazing how they approached you. Because of them actually hacking your information and knowing your bank accounts and everything else, and then approaching you with an offer to
tell our audience what happened
how
this happened to you.
Well, what I did is I was starting an internet e-commerce website, and I purchased a web builder, and it took me several months to set the website up because I was trying to have a store that had a lot of products that could reach a lot of people, and I could have the products drop shipped to the people. So I thought it was a good way to get off of disability because I had been laid up with my back, and I was just trying to earn a better income than what disability pays. So anyway, I was very nervous initially about doing anything online related to any finances because I never even used a credit card online. I never did online banking because you always hear those stories in the background, but you never think it's going to happen to you. But
right.
I said, let me go the extra step and set up a whole separate bank account that's linked with this website. This way it's not my personal account. So I did that thinking that was going to help protect me. I had a firewall, I had antivirus, I did a secure website, and I did get a security certificate. But what I didn't know at the time was that the web builder that they had sold me was designed so that they had a view from the back end. So in other words, if you went to my website to make a purchase and have it shipped to you, they would see you put in your name, your address, your phone number, your credit card number, your expiration date, your three-digit code. They'd have all that information just because that's the way the site was designed.
So when you
that
was the web designer,
the web builder
had all this information.
People would go to a website, that information was stored at the website when you would make a purchase, and then it would email that information to myself because I was the merchant, and the merchant would also see the product. But unbeknownst to me at that time, that was even before I knew my computer had been hacked.
Mm-hmm.
This was, they just had a view from the back end, so it didn't even matter that I had all this protection on my website because they could still see everything.
Oh, okay.
But what happened, what turned me on to even knowing that my identity had been stolen was the fact that I stopped getting my bank statements on this account. And when I would call the bank up, they would tell me, no, we have it go into this address. And I said, but that's correct, but I'm not getting my bank statement.
Huh.
2 months later, I'm still not getting my bank statement. 6 months passes by. I go to the post office, and there is a pack of bank statements. All of them had been opened, and they were rubber banded together in my box.
Huh.
And it had my name, but it had a different address. Called the bank back up as soon as I got home and said, what's going on with my account? And they guaranteed me my address was correct. And I said, I'm going to be there in 15 minutes. Got in my car, went there, put the bank statements on their desk and said, okay, can you tell me who approved this change of address? I've never even lived in this town or this city. How did this happen? Whose address is this? I'd like to know because now all my banking information went to somebody else. And now these bank statements, who knows where they've been sitting and where they've been going. And they're like, well, it looks like, well, the money's in the account. Nothing happened with that. They're like, but look at our computer. It says it was going to your address. So I got thinking about it. I'm thinking, well, maybe somehow it got changed on the other end, like where the bank statements go out of, because it doesn't necessarily go out of your bank.
Right.
They have like a warehouse that they do this through. So that's what I was thinking. So,
and how receptive, what did the bank do to help you?
Nothing. I ended up having to open, that was after the fact, after I found out. Let me tell you what happened next, though.
Okay.
Because I didn't even really know, other than that happening, I had no other signs at that point. But then I got a phone call from the electric company, and they said, we're turning your electric off tomorrow because you haven't made a payment, you're past due. And I said, yes, I did. I said, with this check number for this amount. And they said, well, we don't have it recorded. And I said, maybe I should call my bank and see if the check has been cashed. And he was so insistent that I make a payment that minute, otherwise they were going to turn my electric off the next day. So finally I gave in and I said to him, I said, well, if I make a small payment of like $10 or $20 out of my checking account, would that suffice? He says, yes. He says, but are you sure there's enough funds in your checking account to cover this? And I said, what creditor ever asked you if there's enough funds? They just take your information and run with it. And
right.
At that point, I hadn't even given him my routing number or my bank number. And I said, what was your name? What's your employee number? And what phone number can I call you back at? And I ended up calling my bank. Found out my bank account had been closed for a week. They never told me, never notified me, nothing. And this after I put them on notice about the bank statements not coming.
Right.
No,
but they didn't close.
Wait, this was your local
What's
bank.
That?
Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And they never closed my account that was with the website. They closed my personal account. So I had to go down and file a police report, and then I had to reopen another account. And not only did they close my account, but they went into my line of credit and stuck me with some debt to pay back to the bank. And that, there were no laws on the books at that time for anything being done through the computer. So I got stuck paying all the debt. But because of what I've gone through, there's laws on the books now. So if it happens, you're not responsible for this.
I want to thank you for that, by the way, too, because I thought because of your actions and in this, because I know that I got hacked for this show, actually got hacked on my page, and I also got hacked my debit card, you know, the bank. But what happens is they have a stopgap now, and I think this is because of this law. But they will not, unless you personally authorize the purchase, they will with the bank. They won't allow any ATM withdrawal or any cash, any debit withdrawal. For more than $500 on any account, unless it's authorized or pre-approved by the depositor. So, I mean, I think that's all part and parcel of what you know of what your problem led to.
So, Angela, what should people watch for? I mean, could this possibly still happen to someone?
Well, of course. You know, I mean, I always, you know, tell people whatever you're doing on the computer, view it as public, including whatever you have saved on your computer. And if there's something you don't want out there, then don't save it on your computer. Save it to an external drive. Disconnect that drive before you go out on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Get behind a hardware firewall because it's a piece of hardware that they have to get by as opposed to the software that actually hackers create, such
mm-hmm.
as antivirus programs and firewalls. They're created by hackers.
Like
so,
browser, firewalls with your XP or firewalls with Windows or whatever other system you're using,
right.
You know, you have a firewall.
Are those
there.
Reliable?
Yes and no. It all depends who's on the other side trying to get through.
Uh-huh.
That's why it makes it a little bit harder if you put a piece of hardware in their way. It's just another piece they have to get through. And password protect it.
Yeah, what kind of, what would you recommend, what kind, what brand, I don't even know.
It's just a router. You can get any brand of router. You can, you know, make your own decision on that. Some do more than others. It all depends on the settings that you put on there. But, you know, like for myself, I mean, I was just trying to start an e-commerce website. Never expected to have my identity stolen through it. But not only were they stealing, you know, my identity, they were stealing the identities of the people that were coming to my website to make the purchase.
Right.
But, and that's how I opened the book. I kind of explain the whole ordeal that I went through
mm-hmm.
with the purchase of the web builder, how I figured out my identity, they had stolen my identity as well as the identities of others. But then I get into how I figured out.
Yeah.
My
that was amazing
computer
how
was
they,
hacked.
Yeah, how they figured out your, or how they approached you based on, they had already hacked into your account somehow, all right?
Mm-hmm. So they already knew your financials.
No, that you were actually looking for a, that you were thinking of going into this, and then they approached you through the internet. Is that correct?
Yes.
Or called you?
Yes, yep.
Yeah. I forgot if they had called you or sent you information on the internet.
Because initially I was browsing a couple of websites looking for web builders, so I'm pretty sure that was how they initially found me. And then they emailed me, and then
mm-hmm.
I responded to the email because I'm like, oh, this is perfect timing.
Right.
Well, if it's too good to be true, it is too good to be true. It wasn't perfect timing. They were targeting me. But then what got me the one thing was that they were trying to sell me the program based on my available credit on my credit card. So in other words, they didn't have set prices at their website. It was all based on what they told you, what package you wanted or how you wanted to do it, because you can kind of customize it. And they were really smooth talkers and slick at what they were doing.
So what happened to these guys at the web builders?
Well, that one is still ongoing, that case. Mm-hmm. That kind of got treated as a separate case off of Operation Firewall.
Oh, okay.
Operation Firewall, the guy that hacked my computer was the same one that had hacked T-Mobile, MasterCard Visa, Citibank. He hacked the senator's identities. He was the one that had hacked TJ Maxx.
This
guy was targeting e-commerce websites, but he was also targeting the financial infrastructure of the United States.
Did he eventually go to jail?
Well, what happened was they started messaging me.
Mm-hmm.
And so at first I kept thinking, oh, this is a friend of mine playing a joke on me. But by the end of the conversation, I realized it wasn't a friend. And I said, this is weird. I said, I'm closing this account. And I closed that username, and I opened up a new username for Yahoo.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody else starts messaging me, and I'm like, I don't understand how this is going on. I just closed that account. This one's not even open 2 minutes, and they're already messaging me.
Mm.
So by the end of that conversation, I said, you know, I don't have time for all of this. I said, I'm going to bed. And I logged off, and what I did was I logged in under my friend's account,
mm-hmm.
and they said, I thought you were going to bed. And I said, that was Natalie. This is Lisa. How are you doing this? Because you're either in my computer or you're doing this through Yahoo. I'm not sure which. I said, but I've really had it. And he goes, well, we're stalking you. Then he proceeded to threaten my life. And then at that point, I was like, yeah, right. And he proceeds to type my name and address. And at that point, I didn't know. At that point, I took it serious because, you know, he had just threatened my life. So I said, okay, that's it. No more games. So I went right to the New York State Police, who then mm-hmm. referred me to the New York State Internet Crime Division. And initially they told me, oh, it's going to take 3 months till we get to your case. And I said, why so long? Well, homicides take precedence. And I said, you know, not to be rude, I said, but I really don't think the dead guy is going to mind if you wait 3 months to get to his case because he's already dead. If I end up dead, you could have prevented it if you get to my case sooner. Well, that's not how it works, is what I was told. So I said to them, I said, listen, I said, I took out loans on this website. I've got bills coming in that I have to pay. I'm still trying to get the website operational and get it out there. I said, what can I do so that I don't tie my computer up for 3 months? And they said, well, go get a ghost copy, you know, have a ghost copy done of your computer,
uh-huh.
wipe your computer, reinstall everything, go, you know, then you'll have a new computer and just keep doing what you're doing. And I said, and if you don't mind, since these guys are messaging me, I'm going to continue to talk to them. I'm going to try to gain their trust because I'm going to try to get the identity of somebody just in case something happens to me. I said, what happens if I end up missing or I end up dead or you can't find me? You know, I mean, you don't know what can happen. So at that point, they said, well, that's fine. And, you know, we'll monitor your computer from the back end.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, that's good. So in the meantime, this guy kept messaging me, and I said, oh, he's got a webcam, but he won't turn it on for me.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was friends of mine from Oregon called me up one day and says, oh, this guy is messaging us. And I said, oh, please. I said, I think he's the hacker. I think he's the one who closed my bank accounts, got into my electric account, got into my credit cards. I said, I'm having such a mess right now and a nightmare with this. They threatened my life, and they said, listen, we'll do whatever we have to help you catch this guy. And I said, well, I'm trying to get him to turn his webcam on, and he won't. And she says, well, he turns it on for us all the time. And I said, really? So she told me what she had to do. So I went out, and I bought a webcam because I didn't have one at the time. And what I did was, with their permission, I logged on as them. And I turned the webcam on, but when he asked to view it, I denied him. He goes, oh, you deny me? I said, yes, not until you turn yours on. And he turned his webcam on. What he didn't know was that it was me. And I had downloaded a program, a free program, off the internet to snag a picture of my desktop. So when he turned his webcam on, I printed his picture. So now I had a picture of the guy, but I didn't have his identity. Because you're also dealing with people that are identity thieves. Are you even going to get his real identity or what? At least now I have a picture.
Right.
So what I did is I said to the guy, you know, I was chatting with the guy, and I said, listen, I said, somebody's messing with my computer, they're messing with my life, and I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't, that you're not the one behind it, because you're one of the ones messaging me. I didn't tell him I knew it was him. But anyway, I tried to gain his trust, and so I said, listen, if you're going to continue to talk to me online, I'd like your phone number, because I just like to know who I'm talking to. And I called from a calling card, just in case he wasn't the hacker, it would show the 800 number for the calling card, and he wouldn't know my real identity. And I chatted with him for about 5 minutes, and then I hung up, and then I said, well, how do I know that the person I'm talking to is the same person on the computer? Because I had dial-up at that time, so it wasn't like I could leave the webcam on. I would have to disconnect the phone line and then call him.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I got the cable connection installed, the high-speed internet, and got him to turn it on one day and actually called him and watched him answer the phone. So now I had a phone number to go with a picture, to go with a name, an address, and that's how I got the first hacker. All of this while the police were watching my computer. So they watched me catch this guy's identity in live time.
So then the police followed up?
Yeah, because what they did is that one guy led them to all these other hackers that he was having dealings with. And there was a whole ring of them worldwide. There were 48 people involved.
Wow.
28 in the United States and 20 overseas. And it took from July of 2003 till October 28th of 2004 when they were arrested. And that was because they had to put laws on the books for what they were doing, because there were no laws on the books.
Wow.
So a year and a half had to pass.
So are they in jail now?
They're all in jail. Most of them got 30 to 60 years. So they're going to be in there for a while.
Federal prison.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. And they're all over the U.S. and all over the world. And what was amazing was the way they choreographed the arrests, because all the arrests were done within 3 hours of each other, because they didn't want to give the guys a chance to notify the others.
Right.
That they were getting arrested. They had to have police in Belgium, in Russia, in China, like ready to pounce on these guys at the same time they were ready to pounce on them in New York and New Jersey and Colorado. And
wow.
That's amazing. And I think,
yeah.
You're amazing.
Yeah.
You really, really are, that you pursued that and you were able to snare that guy. I mean, that took a lot of courage, I think.
Well, you know, when they threaten your life, and you think, well, what's the worst thing that could happen to you? You end up dead. Well, I figured I'm going to just make them leave a trail, because at that point I felt like I had nothing more to lose. If they were going to take my life, what would I have left? Nothing. So why not try to go after them? And not only that, I mean, they had closed my bank account. They got into everything. I mean, they ended up taking down both my websites. I got stuck with 3 loans to pay off.
Oh, God.
So, you know, that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, try to recoup my losses. But it was also to tell the story, because I went through so much during the case that I had to just get it out of my head and get it down on paper and get the story out as a true crime. So that's one of the reasons I self-published the book and did it as true crime.
I think it's a real service that you did, and I bet they regretted the day they messed with you. One little lady from upstate New York took down a whole criminal ring. I mean, that is truly amazing.
Yeah. But that one case led to over 4,000 investigations, including like Bank of America and TJ Maxx and Citibank and MasterCard Visa. There were over 4,000 cases and over 64,000 arrests. That was the last figure I had as of the December of 2005 when they officially closed my case.
I'm surprised that you weren't hired as a crime fighter. I just think your case is just amazing, what happened to you, and I think the most amazing part is how you dealt with it. I mean, a lesser person would have crumbled all that, and I include myself in that group. I can't believe what you did and how you stood up to these people and how you really just didn't let them push you around despite the fact they really tried to destroy everything.
But I thought also that where you were really smart was grabbing that guy's picture, you know, and,
yeah.
you know, fooling these guys. And, yeah, that led to their conviction, I'm sure. Now, to get all of these guys, they must have had a lot of forensic evidence, a lot of computer forensic evidence to show them, to connect all these guys together, right?
Yeah, well, one of the funniest things that happened during the case was that the FBI initially did not want to get involved.
Really?
Well, they didn't think it was that big of a problem. But what happened was my computer guy and his friends got together, and we knew, I had suspected that my webcam was being activated without my consent or without my knowledge, just based on the way my computer was acting.
Oh.
So they started monitoring that, and they noticed that these hackers were activating people's webcams and their microphones without their consent, without people knowing. And they were uploading the video to websites where people would actually pay to view. So they're making money at this at every angle.
Wow.
So what happened was they devised this program that executed, like, if your webcam got activated without your knowledge, it would go into your computer, retrieve your email, send it back to them. But then you would get a pop-up on your screen, and it was a picture of a skull with crossbones, and it would say, "We're watching you." Now,
ooh,
I don't know about you, but I'd freak out if I saw that, right?
I think it's very freaky.
Right. So what happened was, as soon as that comes up, people started unplugging their computers. They weren't even going on the computer. Or they would go on just to get their email, and they'd be off again. So
yeah.
All of a sudden, the hackers weren't getting video for 6 or 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But then they sent an email blast out to all the victims and said that this username from Yahoo was secretly spying on you through your webcam. Please contact your local FBI office. And within one day, the FBI office had over 2,000 phone calls. Now,
wow.
All of a sudden, they got involved.
Wow.
So there was a lot of forensic evidence in this. I mean, they had computers. They had servers. They had one case alone. I have a picture of it on my computer. They had 10 servers set up in this tiny little space. The room was probably like 8 by 10. They had CDs stacked from the floor to the ceiling, the length of the walls, and a couple layers out.
Amazing.
Because that's all these guys did, nonstop.
Now,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, we only have a couple more minutes. Now, I wanted to make sure that our listeners would know where to get your book and how do they get a hold of it.
Okay. It's available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's called Through Angela's Eye, singular.
Mm-hmm.
It's the inside story of Operation Firewall. And it can also be purchased through Ex Libris. And then I have the personal website for the book called ThroughAngelasEye.com, the name of the book, .com.
Okay.
And then I also started another website called HackingIdentityTheft.com. And on there, it has to do, I do a lot with forensics and crime and investigating computer stuff. And I have like a lot of tips that people can do when they're setting up the computer, when they're shopping online.
Oh, good.
Just different things that people can do to help protect themselves. You know, there's more information about the book. People can post comments on the site. So it's an interactive thing.
Oh, that's great. That would be very, very helpful for people. And I urge our listeners to get your book, Through Angela's Eye, and also to go to your websites, especially the one that helps people set up things and make sure they're protected. And
right.
We want to say thank you very much for being
you.
On our show, and it was a great interview. And I still think there's a place for you in law enforcement somewhere.
Definitely. Computer science, cyber, and cyber enforcement, yeah.
Yes, definitely.
But,
and I admire what you did greatly. And thanks so much.
Thank you for having me, because right now identity theft is the number one crime in the United States, so it's a big problem.
Yeah.
And we thank you again very much, Angela, and wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Good night.
That was Angela Hart talking to us about her book Through Angela's Eye. I mean, it's just an incredible story of how one person, just one small person, can do so much to help themselves and to help so many people. And I mean, she's really a crime buster.
Oh, I think so. And, here we go. wait a minute. Oh, okay, here we go. All right, so we got, we want to thank Angela, and we got Woody in the ring here coming up.
Right here.
And
here's his music.
He'll be up in just a second here.
Thank you, Lyra. Good evening, sports fans. Watch your heads on the ropes as you step into the ring with Woody. Tonight's topics, football. And more football, since we're in the middle of what we'd like to call the NFL playoffs. Okay, folks, I hate to say I'm right, but when I'm right, I'm right. This past weekend, I went 4-0 with my picks, and let's take a look at some of these games. We'll discuss them a little bit. We have Baltimore and Houston. Baltimore was at home. It looked absolutely horrendous. Their offense looked just horrible. They are lucky to get away with a victory out of this game. Houston's defense played much better than expected, and I think that's why I would take Baltimore over New England in the next game, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Next game, we have New England at home against Tim Tebow. Now, all week, people were praising Tim Tebow and saying how great he was. And, I'm sure this is much to John Elway's disdain, because, frankly, I don't think John Elway wants Tim Tebow in Denver next year. He's not the kind of quarterback that he envisions to have his team follow. So, Denver went there, and they got smashed, just like I said they would. Tebow's game was kind of exposed. New England's defense, which isn't that good, really stopped them. They didn't allow them to do anything that he does all that well, which is run and throw the short pass and sometimes a deep ball. Really shut Tebow down. And again, New England's defense isn't that good, but I tell you, who is that good is Tom Brady. Now, much like before, Tom Brady had to sit here and listen to it all week about how great Tim Tebow is, how great Tim Tebow is. Let me tell you, I may not be a fan of Tom Brady, but I can assure you Tom Brady is a much better quarterback than Tim Tebow, and he certainly doesn't want to hear about what a great quarterback Tim Tebow is, especially when, Brady's playing at home. Of course they're going to smoke Denver like they did. It was 45-10, and it wasn't even that close. Okay. To the NFC. They had a tough game out in San Francisco. New Orleans traveled out to San Francisco. As I said, San Francisco was going to slow the field down for New Orleans. They probably watered it down a little bit. That was to be expected. And this game was a real back-and-forther. Really back-and-forth, especially the final 4 minutes of the game, which was just unbelievable. Four lead changes, just unbelievable. What it came down to in the end was San Francisco's defense came through. They stopped New Orleans a couple times during the game, which was key. And what really surprised me was San Francisco's offense made some humongous plays, just some big plays. Their tight end really made some great plays, and he really gave San Fran the victory. And then we have a final game where the Giants traveled all the way up to Green Bay. And, of course, everybody and their brother had picked Green Bay on this one. You know, not too many people are giving the Giants a chance. I of course, picked the Giants. The Giants are getting points. The way Eli Manning throws the ball, you got to figure that they're going to keep the game close no matter what. But it ended up being a little bit of a blowout. A lot of turnovers, much like the San Fran New Orleans game, a lot of turnovers, a lot of unexpected turnovers. But, you know, that's just the way it is. You might go all year and not turn the ball over, and then in one game you turn the ball over 5 or 6 times. You know, it's just the law of averages. And I think things kind of caught up to New Orleans, and I think they kind of caught up to Green Bay as well. And also, much like New England's defense, Green Bay's defense stinks. And I've said that all year. That's it's been their Achilles heel a little bit, much like New England. If you can keep the offense off the field, keep their defense out there, you can score on them. And that's certainly what the New York Giants did. Now, this weekend, we have the AFC playoff game and the NFC playoff game. We have Baltimore and New England. Now, this time around, I'm going to pick Baltimore. Gotta like Baltimore's defense. I think their offense will play much better than they did this past weekend. And again, New England's defense certainly isn't as good as Houston's. So I like Baltimore's chances. Now, the Giants are traveling all the way out to San Francisco. I'm going to have to take the Giants. It's going to be a great game. You know, frankly, I think it could go either way. Giants are going to be getting a couple of points, so you got to take the points. It's going to be a close game no matter what. That's certainly what I'm going to do. So I'm going to take the Giants, and I'm going to take Baltimore. And then after that, we'll see it go through Super Bowl and have my Super Bowl picks. So that's it for this week. Shout out to all my woodheads out there. Not much of a winter, but hey, what are you going to do? That's it. Till next week.
Thank you, Woody.
Some great news, and I follow you.
And we're gonna have you on. You're going to be on Friday night, too, so anybody listening, know that George Dixon was Friday night with George Dixon this week, and hopefully we'll amaze you as we always do.
George amazes us.
Yeah. So look forward to George talking on Friday night. What do you got coming up Friday night? Anything special there?
Well, I think we're going to continue on the same thing that we did last week or the week before. And I think it's just dealing with ascension and consciousness and, you know, some of the options that we have available to us. And I like to talk more about the heart and the communicating through the heart. And that's what we'll talk about.
Okay, we'll look forward to that.
We'll definitely look forward to that, George. And we'll Friday night with George Dixon right here this week. So
in the meantime, let's take a short music break, and then we'll be back to news.
All right.
What do you have there, Leo?
Gee, I don't know. It's been a while. Let's play news. Let's see. I think I'll play. What will I play? All You Can Eat. A little Cajun tune.
Jobs and a new facility in Mexico.
Right. more American taxpayer dollars down the rat hole of political cronyism. The Department of Energy bragged about giving $1.2 billion loan guarantee to SunPower, a politically connected solar energy company, to create 10 to 15 permanent jobs, raising critical questions as to if California SunPower is the next Solyndra in the ongoing Cronygate scandal. Unlike Solyndra, which went bankrupt after receiving the loan from the government, leaving taxpayers on the hook, SunPower's deal is more complicated. Many questions are being raised about how the company was able to obtain the loan
and what they did after they got the money. Questions include, number one, how could the Department of Energy give a loan to a company that was under a shareholder suit alleging securities fraud and misrepresentation? Number two, the son of Representative George Miller, Democrat, California, who was paid $178,000 to lobby on behalf of the company, represented SunPower as a lobbyist. Why did George Miller tour the SunPower facility, which is outside his congressional district? And what other official action did Representative Miller take on behalf of a company that is represented by his lobbyist son?
And number three, did the company have the political contributions to the Obama campaign and the DCCC play a role in the deal? And did U.S. taxpayers help pay for the company to open a facility in Mexico after the announcement of the loan?
Was the U.S. government aware that the company executives were in the process of selling a portion of the company to a French company, an action that was undertaken 2 weeks after the loan was awarded? Did the loan allow insiders to cash out, leaving other investors holding on to the stock that has dropped by more than 60% since the loan was awarded?
Imagine that. Yeah.
So they took the cash and left.
Yeah, I mean, this is so fraudulent. This is sick. It's like $1.2 billion of taxpayer money, okay, given away by a crony representative in California. And hang on 1 second. I'm going to finish this thing because it gets sicker and sicker as we go. Okay, questionable finances. In 2009, a year before the DOE awarded the loan, investors in SunPower filed a class action lawsuit against the company, alleging SunPower and certain of the company's executive officers were in violation of federal securities laws. And the lawsuit alleged that the company knew or recklessly disregarded and failed to disclose or indicate the following: that the company made unsubstantiated accounting entries using the class period, the company's financial results were not prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting practices, and that the company lacked adequate internal and financial controls. As a result of the above, the company's financial statements were materially false and misleading at all relevant times.
Despite questions about potential violations of federal securities law, the Department of Energy improved the loan guarantee in 2010, all to create 10 to 15 permanent jobs. That's not some silly estimate. It's what the department itself thought would result from the billion-dollar loan. That's ridiculous.
We're getting ramshacked. What is it? Ramrodded. It's a sick, sick deal. Now you can check this out at the Daily Bail, BAIL. And that's a good site. They're kind of a muckraker site that checks into all these crazy things. And pretty sick. Yeah.
Newsweek's Obama cover, 15 Reasons to Send Obama Packing in 2012. Ron Paul and Dylan Radigan canceling debt held by the Fed. That might be an interesting one.
I was looking at that right now.
Let's go.
This is from Daily Bail as well. And
that might be a good one.
Hang on a second here. Okay.
Ron Paul and Dylan Radigan canceling debt held by the Fed.
Right. This is a
little audio piece there.
Yeah. Let's see. Dr. Paul and Dylan Radigan and debt cancellation and option. This was July 13, 2011. And for anyone who missed this clip the first time around, The Time magazine has picked up the scent and endorses the idea. The liberal economist Dean Baker supports the Paul plan. It's interesting, huh? Ron Paul shares his thoughts on Congress canceling the $1.6 trillion in Treasury bonds owned
by the Federal Reserve as a one-time event.
Accumulated during the QE1 and the QE2, quantitative easing 1 and quantitative easing 2 by the Federal Reserve as a one-time event to alleviate the time constraint of the August deadline for debt ceiling negotiations. Paul has been floating this idea for the last several weeks, though it has yet to gain much traction. Now, this happened, this was in July,
let's play it.
It's 10 minutes long. I don't think I want to play the whole thing. But,
play a little part of it, though, let's see.
Okay. All right.
We await a conversation here with Ron Paul to that very question. What is not a large government or a small government, but a bought government and a government with integrity? And I think that that's the line that you were just so eloquently drawing. And clearly, we have a bought one. Time to change that. And our show starts right now. Congressman Ron Paul serves on the Financial Services Committee, where he chairs the Subcommittee on Domestic and Monetary Policy. He is also not seeking re-election in the House of Representatives to focus his ambitions solely on his run for the White House as a potential Republican nominee for that candidacy. And Congressman Paul, it's a delight to have you back here. Give me any sense of why it is we're not having any conversation on canceling some of this debt, especially the debt that is being fabricated, invented, and absorbed into the Federal Reserve.
Well, that would disrupt things and would expose the Fed for some of the tricks that they play, so they're not interested in it. I was very pleased that I did get a fair amount of attention on the Internet and people praising this idea that it was a sort of a painless way of solving the problem. But it's really only temporary, too, because you don't want to do that permanently. But if you wanted a year reprieve, and maybe the American people would get this Congress serious about straightening up their act and get together and bring this under control. But yes, I suggested that it's not a real debt. They created money out thin air and they bought treasury bills, so the taxpayer has to continue to work hard to pay interest and pay the interest to the Federal Reserve. So if you dismiss that debt of $1.6 trillion and that payment came off, all of a sudden we'd get a reprieve. The only thing I feel like is dangerous about that is they'll take it like, oh boy, I can go back to spending again and we don't have any pressure on us to solve our problems.
Yeah.
But it would solve the problem of no need to close the government down, and we wouldn't have to threaten people and say, well, the Social Security checks won't be out next week and that sort of thing.
And not only that, but it also, I think, is a great way of making the point that people forget, which is that the central bank is the instrument by which we are financing our own national borrowing at the Treasury Department. In other words, we're lending ourselves our own money that we're making up on a computer.
Yeah, it's really a fraud, and it's deceiving the people. And even today, you know, before Bernanke, the Financial Service Committee, I brought up the subject again, that there's a lot of people at fault. You know, all the special interests in the military-industrial complex, the wars going on, and the members of Congress who are vying for power and buying votes. But ultimately, none of that would happen if you didn't have that Fed always there ready to buy whatever is necessary to have a fixed interest rate that they think is the best interest rate, and usually it's much lower than it should be, and therefore they allow this process to go on. And I said, and I truly believe that if you didn't have a Fed responding that way, yes, interest rates would go up and a lot of people would be worried about it, but then the whole burden would be on the Congress. The Congress would say, well, the more we spend, the higher interest rates go up. We shouldn't be doing this. We shouldn't have this much debt. And I think we'd all act more responsibly. So I think the Fed in many ways is a crutch, and I'd like to break that up a little bit, and that's why I suggested that we not feel obligated to pay this debt off to the Federal Reserve.
And the other aspect of that, I suppose, is
that this is a complex problem, and yes, that doing what you want to do with the Federal Reserve could be a very good way to make the point and begin the process of having to do bank restructuring. That would catalyze a long list of other things. You'd need to do a lot simultaneous to anything like that.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of other reforms that should be done, and some criticize my suggestion that said this would take some tools away from the Fed, because the Fed might want to withdraw funds from the banks, which I rather doubt. They're not about to do that. From Bernanke's testimony today, there's no intention anywhere soon to do that. But you could adjust that problem by just raising reserve requirements. If they want to remain in the business of manipulating, the interest rates, they still have management's tools other than owning those treasury bills and draining the banking system of dollars with them.
For years since the financial crisis, Congressman Paul, we've watched the central bank print trillions of dollars in so-called quantitative easing, QE1, QE2. They did this instead of writing down the debt at the time and restructuring the debt at the time, and instead they gave the banks and the household debt of this country to the American government, and so we find ourselves at this precipice. At the same time, there's still talk, and I want to play a soundbite of the Fed chairman, that they might want to do more money printing, QE3, even as housing, jobs, and the debt problem have not been helped by those activities. Take a listen to the Fed chairman.
The possibility remains that the recent economic weakness may prove more persistent than expected, and that deflationary risks might reemerge, implying a need for additional policy support. Prudent planning requires that we evaluate the efficacy of these and other potential alternatives for deploying additional stimulus if conditions warrant.
What is he thinking, in your view?
Well, he's just expressing what he's believed in. He's written about and he's taught for so many years that the tool for the Fed and the responsibility of the Fed is to always print money and create credit and keep interest rates low. And he's doing exactly what he said he would do. Of course, they've been doing it like you pointed out. And today I asked him about that $5 trillion that was created. It's essentially identical to the increase in the national debt during this period of time. And, the position of many on his side of the argument is that we need more consumer spending. And I suggested to him, I said, yeah, but all this money didn't go to the consumers. It went to the big banks, it went to the corporations, and it went to the military-industrial complex. But if we'd have taken that $5 trillion, it comes out to about $17,000 per individual. So if they really believe in this philosophy that, if the consumer would only have the money and spend it, of course, that wouldn't be good policy either. But I was trying to point out that they're not serving the interest of the average person. They're serving the interest of bailing out some friends on Wall Street by us buying up those bad assets, and the middle class and the poor really get dumped on because they're the ones who have lost their jobs.
That was Ron Paul on the Dylan Ravigan Show. I think that that is a great idea that they should.
Has he talked about that in his campaign at all?
I think he has, but
maybe missed it. I don't
know. He talked about this in July, but but he does have a plan to cut $1 trillion
maybe
in the first year, and this might be the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The way to do it is to attack the Fed, make sure that they try to
don't pay them back.
That's right.
Silly quantitative easing.
That's right.
That they did.
What are they going to do about it?
They're not going to do anything. It wasn't their money in the first place?
We refused to buy it. We refused to pay it or whatever, and. I thought this was interesting. Sorry, folks.
We only have 2 more minutes anyway, Leo.
Yeah. But anyway, I thought this was an interesting thing. Imagine no unions. Imagine a job without weekends, 40-hour work week, overtime, safety regulations, child labor laws, minimum wage, and paid leave. I thought that was interesting because that's basically what unions have done. And,
they've done a lot for people.
Yeah.
Even people that aren't in unions that are workers.
There's a little quote from Martin Luther King that said, "God never intended one group of people to live in superfluous, inordinate wealth while others live in abject, deadening poverty." And I think that's correct as well. Let's see, we've got about a minute left. That's about it. I want to thank everybody who joined us tonight, and I hope that again right here tomorrow night, and again on Thursday night, and of course again on Friday night with George Dixon.
And don't forget to get Through Angela's Eye from Angela Hart.
Yep.
And from Ex Libris Books. And we want to thank Woody in the Ring for his segment on football.
And wish you all a very good night.
Yeah, have a great evening, folks. It was nice being with you.
Yeah, very fun.
Join Leo tomorrow and join Leo and myself on Friday night with George.
Yes. And if I can find my goodbye music, we're going to play that. But I can't.
You can't find your music?
I can't find my music. Well, anyway, I wish you a good night. Here it is. Okay. Good night, everybody. Good night, George.
Good night, George.
I'm playing, but it's not.
Isn't that weird? You had trouble playing Woody's music, too. Try it again.
Well, I don't know why it's not playing. It seems to be playing.
Let me try it here.